You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the SFF podcast. I'm Dave, and we've got Michael to start things off. Michael, how are we? Michael McCure.
Hi Dave, how are you? It's nice to be back on. And usually it's a Monday and it's the worst day of the week, but for some reason it's the most happiest day of the week. I wonder why that is.
Good point. We've got Hazel Gilder from the Tartan Army magazine. Hazel, how are we?
Absolutely delighted to be on again. Thank you for inviting me. And ecstatic. I was saying, I was on BBC Radio Scotland on Saturday, and I said I was, the lovely word Scots, scunnered was how I felt for 48 hours. But as of yesterday, as of last night, I was greeting for about 2 hours. And I woke up in the middle of that night at 2 a.m. thinking, gosh, did that really all happen? But you know, I'm delighted and I'm so pleased. So congratulations to Stephen and all the Scotland squad. It's been amazing. Anyway.
Yep. Chris Kajama is here with us as well. Chris, how are we?
They're good. What else can you say?
And a David took on the show who travelled in very mysterious ways to Seville on Thursday night, but he's here with us. He's a Dundonian. He's Gordon Cook. Gordon, how are we?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, it's good. Thanks for inviting me on. Really good. And just feeling fantastic after last night in qualifying.
Okay, so as I said before we came on, I'm the guy that's going to lead the way, but I'm not the guy that's going to start speaking a load of stuff. So who's going to start us off on Thursday night? Because quite simply, there's a lot to get through.
Well, I don't know what to say about the game. I obviously was supposed to be there last week, but first job, first week, and I personally thought the first half, we were very nervous. We know that Scotland always take about 5 minutes to settle. That's the Scotland way. But I think we were highly nervous, as we would expect them to be, because of obviously the high-pressured game that we were going to be playing. But, you know, I felt, you know, in the first minute, I think the first minute it was Torres missed. Was it Torres? I think it.
Yep.
And then 3 minutes was Torres, Morato, corner. I mean, they were all over us. Clearly, March, the fact they got battered in Scotland, you know, they clearly wanted to get their own back and batter us back. I felt like we never really settled, probably about 25 minute mark. I don't know what everybody else thought, but it took that length of time, I think, because the pace was so fast. We were kind of out the stalls, but Spain, home game, home crowd, they knew what they needed to do. I think we were very, very lucky. The woodwork saved us a few times. Angus Gunn. And I was trying to compare Angus versus Craig Gordon. Thought, would Craig have got to some things and vice versa? But, yeah, I think Angus, given that he's only just joined the squad this year, you know, he sort of played, you know, tremendously. I think he gave it, again, 200%. You know, but we struggled. And the likes of Callum McGregor, I love Callum. Callum never puts a foot wrong. Never has a bad game for Scotland, and he was just all over the place. So again, you know, there was high pressure on us, I think, from the outset, and the woodwork saved us. we were very lucky, as I say. And of course, there was a lot of offsides. I think there was one offside goal. A real sigh of relief in the pub that I was in Fulham. That you know, it wasn't, it didn't go in. Well, it went into the net, but it didn't, you know, it didn't count. So, for me, I was glad half time came. I actually went to the bar and got myself a double gin tonic because I thought this is going to be a long second half. And you know, I don't know what Steve's going to say to them all in the second half, but you know, we're going to have to turn this game around. But I thought that was my synopsis for the first half. Anyone else got different views?
I felt as though when Torres had the shot, I was like, oh no, I've got to be in for one of these kind of nights. But as you say, here's all they kept hitting the woodwork, and I was like, yeah, it's going to be kind of like every night, and like, you know, it was backs to the wall at times, but to a man that they did, Scotland did well. And I suppose we'll get to the controversy goal in a minute or two. But like, I thought we were unlucky, and obviously when the VAR went against us, I thought well, we're never going to get anything out of the game. But you know, so I was disappointed, but I mean, I wasn't too upset with the performance because I thought we played well and we defended well, you know. But all happy on Sunday night when we're going to Germany.
Yeah, I don't know what you guys thought, but I felt that there were a lot of fouls. That, I mean, the referee, in my opinion, got his name, and obviously the Dutch referee. But I mean, the likes of John McGinn was fouled at 26th minute. He was fouled. Quite clearly should have been a yellow card by, is it Carvajal? I cannot pronounce it properly. Carvajal. Is that right? Carvajal?
That's a shout.
Yeah. I immediately... John's not like that. John doesn't roll around like, you know, the Ronaldo rolls that he normally... you know, it's not the Scotland way. And the fact that we didn't even get a free kick out of it, or indeed that he wasn't booked, was shocking. And I kind of got that sense that this Dutch referee was going, you know, did he get a brown envelope, you know, before the game? Because it was just shocking the way our players were bounced around the park. And I think you could see that even just before half-time. Obviously, Dyche was booked because I think he'd had enough of it. And there was a lot of frustration. I was a little bit worried that, you know, he might get a red card at one point. But, yeah, I mean, again, I think it was 33 minutes, Marano. It was off the post again. So as you said, Mikey, it's that the woodwork saved us quite significantly. And then that offside rule for Marato in the just before half time.
There's three things that bugged me, two things that bugged me, one for what I went away with the referee in the first half. The McGinn one is one of the worst decisions in the bloody game. Because that was the fact we never even got a foul for that, I was wondering exactly. What was booking. At least a booking. It reminded me of the Scotland-England game between the woman and Sunderland when that Millie Bright bodied somebody, you know? And that should have been a penalty. So it was quite similar for me. I think the Dykes one, I think he's led with his elbow. I think on a different day, he could have got a red for that.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I was
some of the things that happened in like Europe the previous week with like Aberdeen and Celtic and like forearms getting flying about and referees and whatnot. Anyway, it's probably fair to say that with Dykes getting away with it fits in with that narrative. The other one that bothered me was the Andy Robertson injury. How many times have we seen goalkeepers come out with a knee up and think you'll injure somebody if you're coming out like that, and the goalkeeper never gets punished for it? And sure enough, he's come out with the knee up, clattered into Robertson for some obscure reason. The free kick's gone Spain's way, as if Robertson's done something wrong by getting kneed in the back and then getting landed on.
But I thought that was given us offside, I think.
Was it given us offside?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. That's where the free kick was given. was for offside.
But still, as you point, Chris, I mean, I think, yeah, it was a bad challenge in my view. I mean, you know, he knew what he was doing. I mean, I think that Spain team knew exactly what they were told to do, and that is get the key players. I'm just talking from a personal point of view, but get McGinn, get Robbo, get McTominay, get these players, crock them, try and wear them down. Not to the extent they should have done, like, you know, get, you know, have, you know, like, poor Robbo was off the park. I mean, I don't know if it was a dislocated shoulder injury. You know, we wish him well. I know he's not back till mid-November. He may or may not make it back for Georgia or the Norway game, but I thought it was shocking. As you say, it was a high kick. The high kick by the goalkeeper.
It was a knee.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, to go up that length, yeah, right up Robbo. Yeah, I know he's not the tallest of guys, but at the same time, and he came all the way out too, I think, from memory, was right out, wasn't on his goal line.
Right at the edge of the box. It's basically at the edge of the box.
Yeah.
We were at one so often, it's ridiculous. I think the overprotection of goalkeepers in other situations, for the referees to allow keepers to come out with a knee up in a dangerous way like that, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think the last time I saw a goalkeeper doing that pressing, I think you'll remember, was Aaron McGregor against the Hearts at Tynecastle.
I've lost track of how many times Aaron McGregor got away with that. Oh, McGregor was the kind of guy that would lash out with his leg completely, and a completely different motion. Yeah. I'll get away with it.
Michael, so not one against Celtic as well?
What game was that, Dave?
I'm saying Celtic because I've completely forgotten what game it was.
There might have been a few more after that, yeah. But I can't remember, yeah.
And I think McGinn as well was brought down in the 40th minute. So not only was he brought down, you know, in the 26th minute, you know, Rodri again battered McGinn in the 40th minute. And I was like, by this point, I was in the pub shouting. I mean, it was just a screen on a wall, but we were all up shouting at the screen, which clearly no one would be able to hear us. There was just a wall behind it. But we were so annoyed because we just thought we're getting nothing out of this referee. I don't think he's playing fairly, you know. And as you say, the 40, just after that, that's when Andy Robertson also got kneed up in you know, in the shoulder, Chris. So yeah, it wasn't good. And then I think, was Marano not booked over McTominay again? Just because I think it was 3 minutes added stoppage time as well. Marano, clobbered McTominay. That's what I'm saying. I think they had a game plan, and I think they were told, here are the key players that you need to be making sure that, you know, not break the leg or anything, like that's not professional footballers, but clearly make your mark on these people that made the mark back in March. That's my view.
It's even the same. Yeah. It was even the same with Dykes. Every time he seemed to jump for a ball, their defenders would fall to the ground and get a free kick. And
exactly.
It was a matter of time, and it was a case of, well, if they can get him booked, well, that suddenly that null and voids a lot of his threat, because he can't put himself about, which is what he's done so good at for Scotland.
Yeah, Dykes, you know, he's not an aggressive kind of guy. You know, he's passionate and but he as they say in Scotland, he takes no prisoners. You know, he's a guy that you want up at the front, running around to frighten people, because, you know, Che Adams, I think he's a great player, but I think he kind of is quite reserved and he holds back a bit. Whereas Dykes, he's quite happy. You know, he's got obviously a lot more height than Che, but he's more than happy to get in there, and, you know, if there's a chance, he will go for it. Whether or not he kind of clobbers somebody or not, he's more likely to go for that chance, because we just think back to the Norway game, you know, he kept going the whole time. during that horrendous heat that we had in the Ullevaal Stadium. But, you know, he looked knackered to me at halftime. And I'll come on to the halftime because I'll also let you guys speak as well.
Michael, see that incident you're on about? It was Canberra. It was for Hibs. It was Rangers against Hibs. It was Canberra. I just had a quick look at Google there. It was McGregor against Canberra. And see the incident I was on about? That was Christopher Ayer. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Ah, right, okay, yeah. No, I was on about Dave, the one at Tynecastle. I mean, it doesn't matter, but it was a few years ago. Rangers were playing Hearts. Yeah.
Right, okay. In terms of the goal, that's a miserable one tip.
No.
Shambolic of the highest order.
I mean, where'd you go from that? I mean, there was confusion, I think. And I saw this in the World Cup, and I liked this in the Women's World Cup, where the referee went over to, if it was a VAR check, then they went over, checked it, and then over the tannoy, over their speaker, a bit like they do in rugby, announced why they've made that decision. Now, it might be overkill from a male perspective, but I was quite refreshed by the fact watching the Women's World Cup that we actually were told in the stadium why that foul was given, why that free kick was given, why they were booked. You know, it opened it up to kind of understand what was going on rather than this kind of like, we're just going to stand here and, you know, play with my earpiece for 10 minutes and, I had no idea what was going on, and I don't know if anybody else did.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I mean, see when you've got these games happening at exactly the same time as the Rugby World Cup's going on in France, and you compare what they have with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
The Rugby World Cup does it so much better. You get the referees are mic'd up. Everything they're viewing is on the big screen in the stadium. It's not some wee screen that they look at themselves. So Everybody sees what the referee sees. We all hear what the referee's saying to his team. We hear his team as well. Everything is above board, everybody understands what's happening, everything's explained, it's absolutely brilliant, and we have to put up with this push. We're hanging about for 10 minutes trying to figure out what's going on.
To me, it was a perfectly good goal, right? I still don't know why that guy ruled it off, but I think Heather said that he get paid before the game. I'm saying that, no deal, right? But you know, it's actually spoiling the football fans' experience now, because when you go to Parkhead, Guybrooks, Tynecastle, whatever it is, when they've got big screens, you don't know what's happening. All you see is VR check and the screen, and they don't tell you what they're looking at. So they might be looking at a handball, they might be talking about an offside before that, they might be talking about an incident like 5 minutes before that, we don't know. So ruining the fans' football kind of like experience. I mean, let's face it, I mean, we all love football, right, and we all love to go and watch it, but VAR, it's bloody killing football now.
I think I quoted on social media, and I'm old enough to remember this song. You guys aren't. But there was a song that said video killed the radio star, and it should be, you know, VAR has killed the footballing world. Because it has. It's gone OTT. It's gone. It should be there for the likes of, did it go over the line? Did it not? You know, is it a penalty or not? But it's extreme now. And, you know, for what happened on Thursday night, you know, I was confused. Was it offside? First of all, was it offside? I thought Jack Hendy's foot, you know, he had a foot kind of sticking out slightly beyond the Spanish players. And I thought, Jack, what are you doing? And I was thinking, Jack, you should be hanging back here. I know you're excited. We all knew, we were all off our seats in the pub, because we knew that opportunity was, you know, from where the free kick was taken. If it was curled in and somebody got ahead to it, like McKenna, or Dykesy, you know, or even Hendry, that would, you know, we were going to potentially get something. But, you know, according to what I've heard, it was to do with Jack Hendry, and something, the goalkeeper, like, impeded the goalkeeper.
So I can explain this bit, right? Because it was actually only yesterday, because it happened again in the Spain game against Norway. The thing that confused a lot of people was, why was the referee going to look at a VAR decision if it's a simple straight up forward offside? They don't do that. Yeah. If it's a straightforward offside, they don't go and check the monitor. They just go to the earpiece. The earpiece tells them it's offside or not. The problem was, they had to understand whether Jack Hendry was actually actively part of the play.
Yeah.
So in this instance, because he has given a little touch to the goalkeeper, they've deemed that he was active in the play, and therefore that's where the judgment call comes in. That's what the referee has to go and look in the telly. It's not enough for it to be a push to be a foul in its own right, but because he's done enough to interfere with the goalkeeper, whether he's offside or not matters. And he is slightly offside according to the VAR. I've never seen the lines, so I don't know for sure. And the replays we saw didn't see the kick, so I don't know about that. But the combination of the two is why the referee had to look at it and then award the offside. Because it happened again in the Spain game, where their first goal was chalked off as well for something similar. Mm. It was the dubious part was whether the defender had meant to play the ball or not. Because he hadn't meant to play it, they went back to the previous phase when Morata was offside. If he had meant to play it, it would have been fine, because then it would have been a case of, no, he's meant to play that. He's made a mess of it, but he's meant to play it. So Morata is not offside because he's got it for an opponent. Because he never meant it, it wasn't deliberate. That's why it was ruled as offside. So I only discovered this yesterday, and it then made sense why our goal had been chalked off in Spain.
But also, a lot of pundits and like everybody saying, perfectly good goal. But if you think back to the goal, and if you watch it again, Scotland should get a penalty as well. Because
Dykes
I don't
been wrestled. It was Dykes.
Yeah,
Dykes getting cuddled.
Dykes got fouled.
Yeah.
So that was completely ignored, which, again, should have went our way.
Yep.
It's a shame. I think a lot of us are annoyed because it would have put us 1-0 up, and it's a terrific goal for McTominay yet again scoring in this campaign. That annoys us because you've rolled out such a brilliant goal for such an innocuous little thing. It seems a bit harsh, but I guess technically, being
at the game, like at least at home, you saw some replays. At the game, we had no idea what was going on. We couldn't work out why there was a VAR check, and even at the game, when it eventually came up saying it was disallowed, it flashed up on the screen that it was due to a foul, didn't say anything about offside or anything like that. And
that was another problem, actually, because the referee didn't put his hand up initially. There has been pictures for the Daily Record a couple of days later saying that he did at one point have his hand up, saying it was an indirect free kick. But he looked like he'd given a foul, as if he'd given it for the Jack Hendry push. And when you look at it in its isolation, the push isn't enough for Jack Hendry to have fouled anybody.
And the thing is, if Jack Hendry's not there, the keeper still wasn't. The keeper didn't make any move to try and get the ball. It was passed before. If Hendry hadn't been there, nothing would have changed. It would have still gone in.
Yeah,
and I did feel for one of my friends who I was at the game with. He had bets on McTominay first goal scorer, and McTominay scored from outside the box. So we were as well as celebrating the goal, celebrating thinking it was his round after the game.
I was going to ask you about, you know, the seating arrangements. Were you far away?
I was in the back row of the stand.
Oh my goodness! So did you need opera binoculars?
A lot of people moan about the how far away you can be at Hampden, but that was on a different scale.
Yes, I saw some of the seats, and I thought they looked like what was the artist's name who did Matchstick Men? I forgot.
Lowry.
But Lowry, that's it. It was Lowry. It looked like a Lowry painting of just tiny little people. Not. I couldn't. And I just thought, how you'll be moaning about Hampden, but at least you can see the play. These seats away at the back. I'm glad in a way I didn't go, because being only 5'3", I would have seen that zilch, and it was a waste of money. I might as well have been at home watching it on Viaplay for $9.99 rather than paying all that money to get there. It was shocking, these nosebleeder seats. I mean, I just don't know how anyone can see. But poor you. So that must have made it even worse for you, Gordon.
Yeah, you had a giant high call up the stairs, and you realize you're all the way to the back. You turn around and you go, I can barely see the other end of the pitch from here.
It's just shocking. But then that's, you know, all these kind of stadiums in Europe are kind of enormous. We're just used to Hampden, and it's nice. Yeah, we moan about the sort of running track around, but to be honest, it's actually quite acceptable when you see the likes of where we were in Seville on Thursday, because I thought these are the nosebleeder seats and they can't see a thing.
That stadium was built for Olympics, so it's got a proper running track, because when Hampden had used for the Commonwealth Games, they had to raise it up a bit and put the running track in. So we're not quite as far, the seats at Hampden aren't quite far enough away to fit a running track in. That one's got a running track that to this day, I remember the entire length of it, but that's a different game 20 years ago.
I thought poor if you were at the back, then you get a bus to actually get to your seat at that point. But I've been at Wembley. I was at the Lionesses final. I was actually doing an article for the Women's Football magazine, and I was in the nosebleeder seats right at the top. I couldn't see a thing. It was, I felt kind of a bit, and I never suffered from it. I had a bit of vertigo, sort of looking down, you know, and it was like in the corner, and I thought, this is dreadful. I mean, I'm so used to Hampden because I'm in the south stand, normally near the main stand, and you're used to kind of being able to see everything. So I was just curious to see where your seat was, Gordon.
But yeah, I couldn't be much further away.
If you could capture that, bottle it and bring it home, then it would be worth a fortune.
Yeah, and also even like the disallowed goal, because the angle from the corner where all the Scotland fans were going in, most Scotland fans had the perfect view of the ball going in because it came across right to us. So it was some scenes in the way in when it went in, but I think most fans were still busy celebrating halfway before while the referee was away off checking for VAR before they even realised.
I understand Simone ran all the way up to the halfway line to kind of, because that was the thing I couldn't understand. Because if I'm fouled as a keeper and I think somebody's fouled me immediately or blocked my view or put my hand out or they've had a special cuddle in the goal mouth, you know, him and Henry, then I would immediately have put my hand up and created a big stushy about the whole thing. But nobody did. And that's the thing. The likes of Rodri.
Not initially, but after about 5-10 seconds, all the players were surrounding the referee. The keeper was charging up at the referee. So they did surround him after they sort of realised there was a potential of it being checked for VAR. But initially they accepted the goal, and then I don't know whether they then realised, oh wait, this could get checked, let's kick up.
Yeah, but that was my view. I thought, this is a Spanish anger moment, you know, like they did, they moaned about the grass, exactly, the blades of grass at, you know, Hampden or rest. And for me, if somebody was, and I don't understand why the referee, he should be watching where players are, you know, if they're interfering with play. You know, we've said before in the World Cup, you know, the old splatter comes out, they kind of organise it all and they stop the play and say, right, you know, everybody back, they sort out where everybody is. That didn't happen on Thursday night. It was just it was a shit show. It was after the watershed, but it was a shit show. The guy lost control, I think, really, to be honest. And listening to, I understood that Simone got booked. Is that correct? I heard
someone definitely got booked. I was not totally sure who the card got flashed to, but certainly someone was booked from the Spanish side after the goal.
I heard it was Simone for running up and shouting at the referee, going, you know, I was kind of blocked and I couldn't move. But I don't remember Jack Hendry kind of had his arms around him. You know, he was just there. And he's a tall guy, and that's what defenders do, especially for free kicks that close. You know, they will naturally be there or thereabouts. But I personally thought, I said to the guy beside him, look, I think he could see his foot just edging it, a bit like McKenna's goal last year against Armenia. It was his toe or something, his foot that was offside. And it was ruled offside, you know, where I was 3-0 up. But it's one of these things, you know, if you've got a finger in front or anything now, I mean, it gets ridiculous now. Offside, to me, offside is when you know, everyone else is behind you and you've run on, and, you know, when the ball has been played, you're miles away ahead. That's offside, not a toe or a finger or a nose. But that's just a female point of view, I guess, from me.
I agree. I think that the fine margins that we used to get for offside are now, that they're so fine that VAR can pick up on them, that human error is kind of, it's now favouring the defenders that you can be ever so slightly offside. And it's just, I think they need a daylight rule or something to give the benefit back to the attackers here.
I think also the fact that, as we said earlier, say if they use it someone the way the rugby, if we are, you hear what's been discussed by the ref and the VAR, at least you can then understand what they're looking at, why a decision's been made. Half the problem is you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know what has actually been looked at, what's the decision, why has that been made? You know, at least if you knew why something's been made, you can accept it a bit more. It's still the not knowing what's actually the ruling.
And again, as I said, they did that in the World Cup. You know, Women's World Cup was the first, because I was a bit shocked. I thought, oh, this is new. Is this a new UEFA, you know, thing that's going to happen now for World Cups or tournaments, that we're going to hear what the decision? But clearly the Women's World Cup was a one-off. But I welcomed it. I thought it was great, because you thought when it was played back, you kind of went, well, yeah, that was right. It's the right decision. Or no, it wasn't. So, yeah, I don't know why they're not applying the same rule to the rest of the, you know, the men's tournaments. I don't understand that. It would be great if they could bring it in for the Euros again, but I can see VAR causing us issues even in, not just Scotland, but in general in the Euros next year. It's just going to cause a lot of controversy. I think there's going to be more of that.
I mean, the thing is about it as well. Just quickly, football's all about fans. Like, we pay good money to watch football, and it's getting ruined by VAR. I mean, I know I was joking about this the other day, my mate. But back in the day, you would go to the pub after the game and talk to your pals in the pub, or maybe the opposition fans about the game. But now you go to the pub to speak about VAR. So, like, VAR is getting made like the headline and scheduled the actual guys that it goes out to play football for for Scotland or the Premiership teams up in Scotland or even down in England. You know, it's just a complete farce.
And just to throw a bit of a kind of curveball here, do we think Steve Clark should make changes at half time? I know I've got my own opinions, but what do you guys think?
I think he did change something at half time, maybe just in the way we were getting set up, because we're very nervous in the first half, really struggling to get our foot in the game, whereas we came at second half and got a lot more. We managed, we're keeping the ball a lot better and pressing better. For the first half, it was just clear your lines and then go get back and defend. We're holding the ball a lot better and getting up the park. So although we didn't make a sub, I think we definitely made changes tactically wise.
Because I noticed, you know, I was counting down the minutes. I was thinking, this is not a Norway game, Clark. This is Spain. These guys are run ragged. And I mean, the first half was telling, you know, 48 minutes, you go in, you have a few, you know, energy drinks and you're back out again. And he waited to the 79th minute to bring on Armstrong and Adams again. And then 87th minute, Gilmer McLean. In my view, he should have thought about this after half time and thought, are these guys, you know, the likes of Dykes, Christie was run ragged. I mean, he ran around the whole time, but just got nothing because we played very a deep defensive, you know, play. We never did what we did in March. In my view, it was deep. It was deep, you know, in our own half the whole time, and that was obviously the way, you know, the formation, the 4-3-3 that that Spain had. But and we played our usual 5-4-1. But you know, for me, I think Clark should have thought about maybe changing a couple of players here and then we may well have, because if you notice when he got a, you know, sort of Armstrong and Adams, it was, started to kind of get fresh legs, started to create chances again. But at that point, you know, you're running out of time at that, you know, time is ticking on and, you know. Yeah,
well, chasing the game at that point, which hadn't been previously.
Yeah, exactly. I
do wonder with the fact that obviously having to take Rob off in the first half, using up one of the sub times, maybe just changed the way he would have thought about making his subs, that if he still had three opportunities to stop the game and for subs in the second half, he might have made those changes earlier, but he's scared to maybe make the change and then knowing that he might have to throw something on to try and get something back or hold out late on that we wouldn't have the chance to make the subs.
Yeah, I was disappointed that, you know, he kind of waited that long, but again,
it kind of worked against us as well, because one of the best chances we had in the game fell to Adams just after he'd came on as well, and he fired it.
I know.
Which was unfortunate.
Armstrong had a great chance as well. So it was the two of the subs were probably had their best chances.
Yeah. And it was just after he came on. So, I mean, just to go back to their goal, I mean, the second goal is unfortunate because Hickey slaps and they take the most of that. I think the first one probably could have been defended a bit better because we never stopped the cross getting in. There's no doubt Morata timed his run to perfection, but I think the defence was a wee bit sleepy, even with him in there. But yeah, I think we should have stopped it coming in the first place. But the second one was just unfortunate that Hickey slapped at a really bad time. And that's going to prove so crucial in this group as well, because that cancelled it head-to-head.
And the thing is, it's not just the Hickey slip, it was also how unfortunate Poitras was. You know, he did so well to then get back and make the block. And how many times you see that block and it goes out wide, it goes out for a corner and it's cleared. It's just the way the ball bobbled and spun, it went in.
Yeah, it was Poitras had to make a decision, you know, he did, you know, because he knew that it was going to go in, you know, one way or the other. So I was gutted for him, to be honest.
There's a small mercy, I think, though, because it's been credited to the Spaniard, not to Porteous, on their own goal. So that's just a wee bit of a cut of solace for him, though.
Yeah, but hopefully, yeah, it's one of these things, you know, you have to make the decision to go for it, and because you can't just stand there and wait for the you know, the forward to score. It's just unfortunate. And again, I think he was run ragged. But then who would you have put on as a kind of defender? You didn't have anybody at that point because everyone is a midfielder or a forward at that point. So, and I was delighted. As you know, Scott McKenna is one of my favourite players. I was delighted he was back on the park. He seemed to have a really good game considering he hasn't been playing at Forest for some time. Obviously he's been injured, but he hasn't been in the squad much at all. So again, him and Hendry are pretty solid at the back, and I'd like to see them again, and you know, against Georgia, as you mentioned, Chris, I think a banana skin, we could get beat by Georgia, but then they've got, you know, there's nothing for them to kind of, you know, they don't have that chance to go to Euros, but I suppose there's a pride element in that they want to try and get as, you know, get up as far as the group as possible to kind of prove a point. But
yeah, I'd imagine Norway will be the same as well, because I was saying this before we recorded that although the group is decided at the top two or three, it's Spain and Scotland.
Yeah,
the chances are Spain are going to win their two games because they're against the two teams they've already thumped last month. So we still need to win our two games because the best runner-up will be pot two and the other runners-up are either pot three or pot four. So although we probably won't get pot one now, which is unfortunate because we'll not be able to overtake Spain in the goal difference, pot two is still achievable. We are currently in that slot right now because we've got the best record. We will keep that best record if we beat Georgia away and we beat Norway at Hampden.
Yeah.
And that Norway at Hampden is going to be a party time because that'll be we know we've already qualified. We can just enjoy it. So it'd be good to add the result to it as well. And hopefully we can finally beat Georgia away because that has just ruined two campaigns.
So who was hiding behind our sofas last night then?
I was all right. I watched the game and I was... I don't particularly like this Spain side, so I didn't even want to support them. I was quite happy if it was a draw. And the minute Spain scored, I was supporting Norway, but they never looked like scoring.
No.
They were just, I think they had one run with Haaland at one point, and he scared the crap out of the Spanish defenders. And that was it.
I saw that.
The boy Numa wasted so many opportunities, it was ridiculous. They just in after the goal.
And I think it was just with the VAR decisions in the game again. I think it was, you were just sort of going, oh no, this is just going to go wrong here.
We're back again. I know, it's like, oh no, we're back. VAR is killing us again in another football.
I looked at it a different way. I was too busy laughing at it because it's funny how that came back to bite Spain just 3 days after they benefited from it against us.
I just thought if Spain win, I'm happy, you know. It's ultimate. I can't remember my lifetime of falling Scotland ever has an automatic qualification. Maybe we did France in 98.
98 was the last time we did it automatically.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought
or whatever.
Yeah.
This is the first time ever that we're qualified with two games to spare.
Yeah, that's what
I thought. And qualified before England.
I'm qualifying for England as well, yeah.
Come on, Italian. Yes, I'll try not to be shouting at the Italians tomorrow night, but listen, the Italians, you know, they didn't end up in the World Cup, but they're playing really well at the moment, so it'll be interesting to see how England fare against the Italians at Wembley tomorrow night. But of course, I shan't be watching that. I will be glued to the TV to watch what will be an interesting game, if we want to segue into that chat, Dave. If you feel we're talk about France tomorrow.
Before I was actually going to go and speak about tomorrow, I wanted to go on a topic that I actually completely forgot about, and it was about what's been your key moment behind Scotland qualifying at this stage. Is it Norway in terms of that 104 seconds, which is famous? Is it Spain in March? Is it the small wins? Is it the rainy night of Hampden in June? For me, it's Norway, but what are you guys thinking?
I'm with you. For me, the Norway turnaround is the key. As much as we got a brilliant result against a Spain side that were reasonable but never really troubled us, the Norway result was the big way because that was the one that put us in such a great position. It left Norway chasing us, needing desperation by that point already. And for that to go from 1-0 down to 2-1 in the way it did, it must have broke them. So for me, that's the key moment in this qualifying campaign. That's when I knew we were going to qualify.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. Norway for me, you know, if we all went into the campaign going, well, Spain will win the group and it's between us and Norway to fight for second. And to turn it around there, especially after, from memory, a very soft penalty that Norway got as well, to then just turn it around, get those two late goals, gave us such a boost, put just totally deflated Norway. And in a game where Norway didn't really actually do very much other than that penalty, it sort of gave me real hope and belief that we are going to do this.
I tell you, see the Kenny McLean goal? That's one of the best goals I've seen Scotland score. Just the entire play of that build up into it, and then just the placed finish with his wrong foot. Just brilliant goal. It's not like my favourite goal I've ever seen when I've been there for Scotland's corner was the Maloney goal at Celtic Park against Ireland. That I've never seen a short corner work as well in my life. The Kenny McLean goal's a better goal.
And you go, Heather.
Hazel. I'm sorry, everybody calls me Heather. Don't worry. Answer to a lot of things.
You would think you would think I would know you by now.
Exactly. It's on there. No it's the same for me. As I say, it was a very warm day. But you know, that for me, that is, as you guys have said, and Chris and everyone, that it showed that we were good enough. We were actually with a different, and I say typical woman, but I actually cried the next day when I was on going home, back home to Edinburgh to go back for the Georgia game. But it hit home, I think, the following day. Obviously, I was excited because, you know, I couldn't believe, but we never gave up. I think it's, we have a different mindset. We're now playing as a unit. And almost like a fraternity now, rather than the way we did before under Strachan, Levine, McLeish. We are now playing as was Craig, God bless him, Craig Brown, that you have to play for each other. You have to join forces and play as a unit. There's no, I play at Liverpool and I play at, you know, Everton and all the rest of it. It is one unit, and everybody's going for the same outcome, i.e. the goals, the points, and then the qualification. And that, for me, that day, I saw a complete entire unit just gel together and almost know each other, where each other was going to be. You know, they were, you know, you could see it, you know, the slip across from McGinn, Dykesy, back onto McLean and then on into the back of the net. It was a terrific right footer, and you know, as you say, Chris, it's been one of the best goals. You know, I mean, the McTominay goal would have been absolutely class if that had gone in and stayed. I mean, that to bend it in like that in the right hand corner from where he was unbelievable. It's just, that's one of the best goals I've seen in a long time by Scotland. But yeah, that Norway changed it, in my view. I think during that was it. And we moved, and we just, the belief in the camp, there's been a lot of talk about mental agility. We've got the skill set there, and we've got the squad now. Before, we were so desperate for players, and we were like, people that we didn't even know. I mean, I didn't know half the players, and I was thinking, who's that? And double-barreled names, and people coming up from England and all the rest, and you'd no idea who half the people were. And then they played a game and then they disappeared. You know, it was kind of one of those moments. And Bertie Vokes, I think, was the same. You know, you didn't know half the players were. We know who everyone is. We know their personality, how they play, who well they play for. You know, your likes of McGinn, you know, is great up front with Christie and Dykesy, you know, and McLean. But you know, Dykesy and McGinn have this kind of, they just can read each other so well, and it's exciting to watch.
I think we've got. Go, Michael.
And you go, Gorgon. Yeah.
I think it's also the fact that you're now seeing the players coming off the bench. It's not weakening the team anymore. You know, for years when we're forcing to making a sub, you were going, "Oh no." We're going to lose it here. Now you're bringing on players that are, it's fresh legs, and but they still know their role. They're still going to play the same way, and we're not necessarily weakening ourselves so much now. And I think that's also helping us keep fighting, keep digging in games, because there's that quality to come off the bench, and the players can run themselves into the ground without fear of they're going to have to play the 90 minutes because we don't have anyone to replace them. Now, run yourself into the ground, putting the performance, and if you're done, we'll bring someone else on for you.
I think it probably says a lot that we went into the Spain game without Tierney. We then lost Andy Robertson in it as well. and we still managed to do, well, I mean, we thought we'd got ourselves a goal up, and it was only like a couple of lax moments that lost us the game in the end, but it wasn't a bad performance, even missing key players like that in key positions. So that speaks volumes. I mean, if we'd lost that under like some of the previous managers, we'd have get Kazakhstan or something.
Yeah, but like 7-0, would have gone home.
Aye.
Go on, Mickey. Sorry.
Got to apologise to Hazel, because you would think I would know her name by now, because we've only been working together for the past year. But let's just call it Alzheimer's or dementia, whatever. I definitely the Norway one, and Hazel's right, the mentality in the squad, because years ago, you would be saying, oh no, Scotland's getting beat 1-0, before you know it, or no, it's 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, or no, 5. But now it's never say die kind of like attitude as well. And, you know, it's brilliant to see Scotland playing brilliant football. And, you know, everybody's playing the part. I mean, to me, it's like a club feel to the team, and if you know what I mean, it's scheduled for a kind of international. You know, but I mean, massive credit has to go to Stevie Clark, because he must be a good manager as well.
Oh. So, I mean, I have to admit, this is one of the best periods of support in Scotland I can remember.
Yeah,
I mean, I've grown up through the '90s where we used to qualify for just about every tournament. We're just having some amazing performances and amazing games, and they're at one after the other as well.
Steve Clark,
it's not
Michael.
Fluke, exactly.
Yeah. Sorry for cutting in here. Steve Clark, Michael, he was one of these forgotten gems in terms of management circles, so to speak, because we were all a bit like, say, your Moyes, your Sir Alex's, all these Scottish managers that were either managing in the English Premier League or were one of the bigger ones, so to speak. Steve was either an assistant to various big personnel within the game, or he was at clubs such as West Brom, where the magnitude and the cross positions, imagine these clubs are smaller than you can imagine. He's went to Kilmarnock, and that was the perfect, stepping stone, so to speak, to get in this job. I mean, Rangers and Celtic at the time, because of the job he was doing at Rugby Park, were wanting him. And that just goes to show you, that's a guy that we'd forgotten about back in 2005, 2006, whatever have you. So we've inherited a guy who, let's be honest, was a guy that went under the radar management circles, because we'd been busy going on about guys such as Dirk McInnes and Jack Ross and David Moyes and all these type of guys that have either done it or they've been in Scotland and not done it. In the middle.
Yeah. You make an excellent point there, Dave, because a lot of people forget that, if it's a ex-Rangers manager, Walter Smith, Tommy Burns, ex-Celtic manager, managing Scotland. But, I mean, you must give the SFA a bit of credit sometimes. I know it's hard to say if you're a football fan for different clubs in Scotland, but they actually went out through the box and they went to a so-called, sorry, Kilmarnock fans, if you're listening to this, a lesser team, if that makes sense. And instead of going for the obvious ones at Celtic and Rangers, they thought, no, let's go down to Sunday Ayrshire and let's get Stevie Clark, and then let's give him a new deal as well. So the SFA has got to be applauded for this as well. And also, I think it also puts Scottish football on the map a wee bit as well, because, as you know, Dave, I like to promote Scottish football a lot. But it says that, you know, like, you know, Kilmarnock can bring a good manager in, you know, and instead of looking at the big two in Glasgow, you know, and I suppose that's a bit good for the game as well. And don't forget that he beat, you know, he beat Rangers in the last game of the season, and I think he beat Celtic at one point as well. So he's got a good CV.
Well, if you look at that period, Michael, if you take Celtic and Rangers out of the equation here, to Barnock for this one season wonder, so to speak, under Steve Clarke. I mean, if this season and prior to that point, and even after that point, it was Aberdeen first and third every season under Dirk McInnes. But Stevie Clarke, under that two seasons he was in there, he was always going to come in and it was always going to be an upfield battle. But he managed that battle, he won the battle successfully, and then obviously getting him into Europe. And then obviously, we all know what happened after that with him getting the Scotland job and Angelo Alessio absolutely embarrasses Scottish football. But yeah, I mean, I think stories such as Steve's is why we took a gamble on him. And let's be honest, a lot of people were going, imagine if they kill him.
And I think also it's also helped that, see, because he's come from Kilmarnock, he understands there are good players in the Scottish Premier League beyond just Celtic and Rangers. So he's not been scared to bring players in from all different clubs in the league and play them. It's not, you know, for a long time it was, if you didn't play at Celtic and Rangers, maybe Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen, just about, it was you could only get the team if you were playing down south. Now, if you're playing well for any club, you've got a chance of being in the squad.
Yeah, fair point, yeah.
I do think, though, the fact that most of the players are playing in the EPL, they know each other, you know, they're obviously playing against each other sort of week in, week out, so they're well aware of each other's skill sets, and I think that adds to the kind of the mix in a way. But again, you know, they're pals off the park, you know, they're good pals off the park as well. You know, it's not, yes, you know, they have to play, you know, professionally against each other, but you know, having that insight with each other as if throughout the seasons has, I think, helped a lot. And I think I mentioned this last time that those EPL players are playing with world-class players. So naturally, if you're training with world-class players that are playing in South America or Europe or, you know, wherever, that's going to rub off on you. You're going to see different tactics, different things, which we can bring back to Scotland, whereas before, all we had was who's coming up through Celtic, who's coming up through Rangers. Oh, we might get somebody from Aberdeen. That didn't work for us under that regime. It just didn't. And now, of course, it's beautiful to see that we're now the likes of, we're seeing Hickey. Hickey's at Brentford, you know, he was at Bologna as well. So, you know, and again, we're sort of seeing the likes of Hendry, who, you know, was it?
Mark Stoss is a great example of that.
Yeah. You know, so again, we're seeing, you know, young players coming up, and now start Billy Gilmore, thank goodness, you know, he was on loan from Chelsea to Norwich, but now he's settled at Brighton. But he was playing alongside McAllister, a World Cup winner, you know, and seeing that and, you know, training in, week out, that has to instill the confidence and, you know, seeing how different things can work, you know, and bring that to the table. It was that I always say to people in work, teamwork makes the dream work. And that I think we're definitely seeing that.
And I mean, let's not forget here, though, we forgot all about Angus Gunn. But I mean, if I ask you the question, he's come into the squad, but he's not really had a lot to do. And that's credit to the whole team overall, you know, defending midfield and strikers as well. Okay, maybe one or two saves here and there in the game, but it's not really, I mean, can you remember that, you know, if he's had millions of shots to save in the game? Because I can't, and that's Craig team.
Yeah, and again, Craig Gordon, I remember the 2021 Denmark game where I said to my dad, he was sitting to my left, and this guy in his 90s to sit to my right, and I said, you know, you've got to look at this game. We're playing Denmark. Okay, they didn't have a full first team out. But, you know, Craig Gordon was trying to keep warm. It was November, it was cold. And I just thought, this is the different side. You know, you've got Craig Gordon out there trying to keep warm because he had nothing to do. All the play was up the park. John Souter obviously got the first goal, you know, and it went on from there. So, you know, it's always nice to see that, you know, the likes of, if we'll ever see Craig Gordon back. I personally don't think he'll be back at international level. I think he's 40, he's too old. I think it's time for fresh blood. I think Angus has, I personally think he's proved himself. And I think he should continue that because Hanley will come back. Hanley is a lot older, but they are teammates, they're club teammates, and therefore that March game that I saw them play against Spain, I mean, they obviously, you could see they played at club level, but they didn't even need to talk to each other. And I'm not a, sorry, Grant, but I'm not, I've never a fan of Grant Hanley, but Grant Hanley played stupendously, you know, well, back in March before he got his unfortunate Achilles injury. So I'd like to see Angus Gunn. We need fresh blood. We need players. And we do need, I hate to say it and I'll go and talk about it tomorrow, but we do need to play the likes of Xander Clark. We have to, because if Angus Gunn gets banjoed in any way, there's no way that we can then turn around and say, well, we haven't tried out other keepers.
Hazel, you brought us on beautifully. How many changes are we making tomorrow?
Yes, I saw that. I mean, you know, I saw that Hickey's out. So Hickey, is he injured?
Does Max Johnston start tomorrow for you?
What, I missed that, sorry.
Does Max Johnston start after getting called up?
Yeah, yeah, so he is, Anne Hickey has withdrawn from tomorrow's game. So Max Johnston is in the squad and will be replacing Hickey. So that'll be interesting to see if he actually starts in the first 11 or does Patterson come on instead of Hickey and then they put Max Johnston on. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see what he's made of. I don't know much about him, to be honest. You guys will probably know more about him than I do. But what's happened to Hickey? Has he, you know, did he injure himself for it? Is he just knackered from the Spain game? I don't know. But I think the rest of... I think tomorrow night, if I was Steve Clark, I would be looking at putting out a B team. Because he made that mistake, in my view, at the England game. He put on his first team. He did it against Turkey last November, where he brought out his A team. Why do that? Why not test out, you know, your younger players, you know, and test them, see what they're made of. You know, that's what friendlies are about. I don't know about what you guys think of that.
For me, I think it'll be a sort of a mixed team. I think there's still quite a number of players in the squad that don't actually have that many caps. Quite a number of even starting players that don't have that many caps, I think, could benefit still from playing. But I do think we do need to give, you know, like Lewis Ferguson, one of the keepers, you know, give them some minutes and get them a bit more experience.
Yeah.
There's a few French players out tomorrow. William, I can't read my writing here, Scaliba, Jules Koundé, Axel De Sassi, and Diot. Camel. Apparently he is he's absent and there's a few new people coming in tomorrow. Castello Lucaba, who's making his debut, and Marco Gusta, who's getting his first cap. So again, you know, the likes of Didier Deschamps is obviously bringing in, you know, he's thought about it and thought, right, it's time for me to bring out my B team and bring out a younger kind of squad as well. I'd be delighted to see the likes of Mbappe because he's moving closer towards Giroud's kind of all-time sort of goal record as well. So I would have loved to have been there tomorrow, but sadly not. But Mbappe is definitely playing tomorrow, as is Giroud, I believe.
I think on your question, Dave, about Max Johnson, I think like he would either start the game or finish the game, coming on from the bench. If he starts the game, I would give him maybe 60 minutes, 65 minutes, or maybe less than that, just to give him a bit of experience. But Gorgon's right. I mean, give, you know, player that's been on the bench the last few games who hasn't got on as well. And I know this game doesn't mean nothing, but it means everything to us on this call as well. Because, I mean, if we beat France tomorrow night, was it Jay McFadden? Because I don't know if Jay McFadden's in the squad. By the way, that's a joke, just in case you do think I've really got dementia. But, like, so it would be good to see the guy. I would like to see Stuart Armstrong playing 45 minutes, because, I mean, he's holding a place going well at Southampton as well. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, looking forward to another game and hopefully another one. It's going to be a very difficult game, but all these games are building up to the Euros, and, you know, it's going to get speeding for the boys as well.
See the thing about James McFadden? It's like,
no, he's not in the squad.
I know he's not in the squad, but he gets all the credit for this because he couldn't be bothered running half the length of the park, so he just pinged it in for 40 yards. Gary Caldwell did it first. He almost gets forgotten of it. So we beat Frank Price in that campaign, and Gary Caldwell never gets anybody credit whatsoever because McFadden's was a baldy. But no, I agree with you. I would like to see us make a few changes. What I don't know is if we will or not, because I've thought this in a few friendlies recently, and Steve Clarke has a habit of playing the strongest team. He may well see this as an opportunity to test us against one of the best teams in the world. This is a France team that played in the World Cup final back in December.
That's what I'm saying.
There is a real test. There will be the enforced changes, because obviously we'll look at Robertson, Hickey can't play either. I think we'll probably see Patterson first, and he want to put out a strong team, and then maybe we'll see him later on.
Yeah, I agree. I think Patterson will be starting.
I'm interested to see what he does on the left side as well, to see if he maybe plays like Greg Taylor or something, but I don't know what he's going to do.
I think Taylor's the only option.
I thought Greg Taylor should get a game. I think that's what I'm saying. I would like to see Jacob Brown out. You know, I saw him against Watford the other week. I wasn't particularly impressed. He wasn't really doing a lot at the front. It's just kind of hanging back. He needs confidence and he gets forward, get into the box a bit more. He kind of hung back quite a bit. And I was shouting at the TV, he said, for goodness sake, Steve Clark's watching you. You know, he's watching all these different games naturally because obviously that's his squad. So it's just a young guy, Jacob Brown, but at the end of the day, if you want to pull on a jersey, you know, for the first time to start in the first 11, you've got to start thinking about, you know, how you play at club level. I don't know about Jacob Brown yet. The jury's still out on that one for me. But I'd like to see him start, you know.
I've not seen enough of Jacob Brown to know whether he's any good for us or not. I would like to see him get an opportunity. I know I'm like to see the opportunity is Gets Ferguson. The guy's ripping Serie A up at the moment. Like he is putting in the performances in a tough league. And he has yet to really get any recognition with that in the Scotland team. So I would like to see him get some decent game time against France, if possible.
No, I agree.
The problem he's got is trying to break into that midfield, because that midfield for Scotland is very difficult to get into right now. Even the guys that come off the bench are like the obvious choices, like Stuart Armstrong or Ryan Christie's in and out. You've got what McTominay's banging in the goals. Can't fault him there. Nobody's going to take out John McGinn. He's a superstar there. Billy Gilmore's another one that comes in and out every so often. Callum McGregor. I know I've heard Josh in this podcast a few weeks ago saying that he doesn't think Callum McGregor's playing is particularly great this season.
Really?
But he's a character of Celtic, and Celtic are top of the league at the moment, and I have yet to see Callum McGregor have a bad game for Scotland.
That's what I said earlier, you know, way back at the beginning of the podcast, Chris. You know, I've never seen Callum McGregor ever having a bad game. I think he's, you know, he's always there. And I mean, even the Ukraine game, the World Cup qualifier, which we got beat, you know, 3-1, he scored that goal. You know, again, you take out Callum McGregor, the whole thing kind of unravels. He's like the balancing act between the defence and the rest of the midfield and the forwards. You know, that extra weight.
The one thing I would say is I don't think Callum McGregor's quite hitting his peak at the moment, which I would tend to get. But the guy's got a high standard. So I think that's probably what you're saying about it.
And because he plays so many games, he's set that high standard for so long.
He plays about 900 games a year or something. So
But I do think that you can afford to play him. You know, even if he's at 50%, he still does a job for you. You know, I mean, you see it like that at Celtic, Chris, as well, you know. But you can afford to drop him because of that experience as well, you know.
The good thing is we've got a lot of leaders in the team. Because obviously, Robertson's the captain and we need it off. Was it McGinn that got the armband? I was like,
that's the obvious
next choice. But again, you've got McGregor there. I think there's leaders all over the park. And I think that's one of the things that we've got here. We said it earlier, there's that club mentality, but that does come from...
Yeah.
Everybody's looking out for each other, everybody's encouraging each other, everybody leads by example.
Yeah, it's just a different mindset, and I know we're talking about France tomorrow, but, you know, I think going to Germany next year with that mentality, clearly, I mean, all the posts that you got today in social media, it was all from the players, but they were all delighted, clearly, to be going to Germany, and I thought they're clearly very excited, and you know, I really genuinely hope that we get out the group. I'd like to see that for the first time.
And I think as well, like Hazel as well, it's another year under working with Scooby Clark as well, and I know last year's European the last Euros was a bit disappointing. Bar the England game, I thought we should have beaten them at Wembley. But anyway, but you know, it's the same manager, same squad, another year, you know, a different tournament, and so on and so forth. You know, let's see if we can get out the group for the first time in the history. Then maybe that makes Stevie Clark at MBE or something. I don't know.
I think if we can make ourselves at least pot two, we're giving ourselves a good chance. So that's the next goal. Try and get ourselves as high a pot as possible.
I think also Steve Clark also learned a lot from the last Euros of how to manage your squad, you know, with all the big games and how to deal with the being away from home for such a long period of time. He'll learn a lot from the Euros and make changes and make improvements to try and set us up better to succeed.
Mm.
And I think that's what I mentioned earlier, Gordon. There's a great Steve Clark interview, which I wrote one of my articles, I think, at the end, after the September games that we had, after we qualified for League A or Group A. There was this kind of openness from Steve Clark. Steve is kind of renowned for not saying much and not giving much away, but it was quite cathartic to hear, because I don't know about everyone else, but I watched the Women's Euros and I thought, well, thank goodness I'm not watching Scotland anymore, because that nightmare of June was just horrendous, and it actually, you know, I just thought, where are we going to go from here? Is this it? Have we reached the end of the line? But clearly Clark went back to his backroom staff and had a long chat. Like, where did it go wrong? Let's look at the tactics. You know, was it tactics? A lot of people were, as I said, I think in my last time I was on, these are professional athletes. They were exhausted. You know, they had played, many of them played in, you know, UEFA Champions League, all the rest, just days before that Ukraine game. You know, there's lots of things, a lot's mixed bag.
It was almost going to be a step too far.
It was a pressurised environment with Ukraine, you know, a country being invaded, you know, it's the end of the season, beyond everyone else, they're finished, and yet here we are, we're having to step up to fight, you know, not maybe one, but two games, you know, to qualify for Qatar, but sadly not, but it was wonderful. And that, if you haven't watched that interview with Clark, I urge you to, because he kind of opened up and said, look, I just thought, what went wrong? And of course, he went to sat with the backroom staff, and there was a lot more sort of thought process around, is it, you know, we don't lack the skill set, we don't lack the passion, you know, is it a confidence thing? And that one, I love quoting, is that Clark says, don't play with the fear of failure, play with the anticipation of success. You know, that should be written up in the Hampden dressing room home wall. I mean, that is a brilliant, you know, statement that he makes. But I think there's been a lot of work done psychologically with the team. In my view, I think there's been a lot of work about confidence, about believing in themselves. These guys are playing in the EPL. They're all playing, you know, earning big bucks, you know, doing well. But as soon as they pull that Scotland jersey on, you know, before the nerves kicked in, you know, they were worried, you know, they kind of were all over the place, they were disjointed. And I think there's been a lot of work that has happened between last June up until now. And I think they're still continuing to do that, to kind of make sure that they are supported mentally, that these big games that come up, like so the Spain games and Norway games, that they are prepared and ready for it. I saw that in their faces, believe it or not, at the Denmark game, there was a kind of blank look, like they meant business. And I said to my dad, these guys are out for the win. They want to be, you know, a home game advantage. And he went, you think so? This is Denmark, Hazel. You know, we were beaten, you know, earlier. I said, no. You look at their faces, they're ready for this and they want to win it. And they did. And it was the same. I saw it in their faces against Spain, the exact same look, that kind of hand face. You know, I couldn't see it in Norway, obviously. We're all standing on the surface of the sun that day, but, you know, you wonder how much effort has gone in to kind of prepare them all mentally to, and I think hopefully that continues towards Germany and tomorrow as well. You know, that will take a lot of things away. The England game, well, okay, it was 150th anniversary game, but you know, I must admit, I was quite impressed with England. I hate to say it. You know, I was hoping we said, didn't we, Chris, that we wanted 2-1, wasn't it? We all predicted 2-1. And then, unfortunately, we got beat. But at the end of the day, I think tomorrow is a good way of benchmarking ourselves about how good we really are. But we shouldn't lose, you know, faith in ourselves, even if we do get beat tomorrow. The predictions that I've looked across are 3-1 to France. Again, France are further up the, you know, the FIFA World Cup rankings than we are. Obviously, having been in the World Cup final with Argentina, so. But still, if we can show that we are as good as France, or at least near enough, then that should instill confidence for us just to kind of rattle through Georgia, get 3 points, as many goals, and then back to Hampden for Norway. And, you know, kiss goodnight to Haaland, let him go to his bed early, and we can have a party. I think there'll be a massive party at Hampden on the 19th of November.
It'll be an unusual experience being able to celebrate at Hampden before the game's even kicked off and be almost relaxed that game.
It's unheard of. And, you know, I did think, you know, after Thursday, I thought, this is going to go down. This is the Scotland way. I've watched Scotland for 37 years now. And I thought, this is so typical Scotland. We always leave it to the very last game. But then I thought, we just look, we've worked too hard, you know, we've won every game, you know, so it's about time we sort of, you know, got lady luck, and lucky for us, it's been, did the business for us last night. So, you know, I think, you know, whatever happens tomorrow night in Leo, I think we should take that away. Clark will do a little bit more work between now and then, obviously the Georgia game, and then from there, see what happens.
Yeah, for me, the France game will take care of itself. Again, it's a friendly, doesn't matter too much. We want to have a decent performance against a top quality side. But I reckon there is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a French team that's got lots of changes in it. I hope it's a Scotland team that's got a good few changes in it as well to try out a few different players. So, but really, the result's not going to be the important thing. It's going to be the performances. It's going to be both as individuals and as a team and see what we get from there. And if we can go toe to toe with one of the best teams in the world, then we can take something from that. If we don't, then we know what we've got to learn. But yeah, the November games will be the bigger games because that's where we try and make ourselves at the pot too.
Exactly,
and hopefully banish some demons in Georgia.
I desperately want to banish those demons. I am still horrified by the two previous campaigns that we were there.
I think we'll do it. I think we've got. I've no question. This is an era of the Glishes and the, you know, the Gemmels. You know, you do get. I mean, I know we haven't seen it for so long. I don't remember. It wasn't my time, you know, but it was my dad's time. But I do believe that we are entering into a phase of, which is why I was crying in Oslo Airport, because it is a sudden realisation that I think this is it. I think we're now in this zone of having such a great squad, a great side, that we are now in a different era. And this is an era of 2020 or 2019, if you want to talk from when Steve Clark joined to now. This is a new squad, and this is, we're going to see amazing goals. Hopefully McTominay carries on, forgets about what happened last Thursday and just goes out and batters them into the back of the net.
I think also it's good, like, a lot of the ages of the players, they're of an age we are, they can go several more campaigns, you know, we're not, it's not a case of it's a squad that can do one, maybe two campaigns. This could be a squad that could go for 3-4 campaigns, or more even, you know. I think that's a big part of it as well.
I totally agree. As I say, we've got young players, you know, as I say, Hickey's only done 20, Gilmore's 20 or 21, I think he's 21 now, you know. So, you know, you want to bring these and lose likes, if you mentioned Dave, you know, like Lewis Ferguson and Chris, you know, like, we've got all these players that we want to kind of grow and bring into the squad slowly but surely, and that's what we should be doing, you know, looking at, because that's, you know, I think McKenna came from up through the ranks, you know, under 20, under 19, under 21. So yeah, again, all these players, it's important that we continue to grow that, the young guys, and bring them in when necessary, but we have to do it at the friendlies. Steve Clark cannot put out the 18 every single time. Otherwise, how are you going to test yourself?
Absolutely. Right, thank you very much to everybody for tonight. Much appreciated. Good chat as always. And we're off to Germany. Hallelujah. And as Gordon says, we don't have to worry about the snow game at all. We can have a few beers, a few wines, a few gins, whatever have you. Just drink whatever you want to drink. And autumn white, you can obviously have a party inside Hampden Park. So thanks to everybody, and we'll catch up very soon.